Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas on Friday, April the 26th. And it's always a great honor, always a lot of fun to have with us the lady in blue. Today I'm in red and she's in blue, and that's a total coincidence. I didn't plan that. But our lady in blue, of course, is Leslie Eastman, contributor to Legal Insurrection, who is our friend in the Golden State. And the guy in red is, well, you know him from Texas, but the color thing is just a coincidence. But I just thought it was kind of cool that Leslie pointed that out right before we started the video cast. So Leslie, it's always great to have you. Welcome.
Good to see you again, Silvio. Looking forward to another review of the news and getting your thoughts on the current chaos that we are enjoying.
Yes, and likewise, I'm anxious to hear yours, and I'm sure you have quite a few. But let me begin. This is just a little thing that I love on this day in history. But on this day in 1945, so I guess that would make it, 79 years ago? President Harry Truman had just taken over from the President Roosevelt, who had passed away. And today he sat down with the Secretary of War and the Military Council. And they told him, Mr. President, I assume they opened up this little magazine or this little file and said, Mr. President, this is the Manhattan Project. You will soon have a bomb that you can drop. They probably didn't put it that way, but that's what eventually happened. So I just think it's fascinating what it must have been like in his mind. Can you imagine him going to dinner later that night with the First Lady and saying, she says, well, how was your day, Harry? And she said, well, Bess, today I learned that I have a couple of atomic bombs in my... I mean, I just imagine what that must have been like, because he really didn't know. He didn't know, and nobody knew. Nobody knew. Nobody outside of a very small group of people knew. But anyway, I just thought it was interesting to bring that up, Leslie.
Yeah, it is a interesting time in history. I especially enjoyed the take of the movie Oppenheimer. We took my son to go see it. It was really, with him being a physicist and going to be working as a physicist for the Air Force in the not too distant future, it was really interesting to see that played out. And, difficult choices were made, but the difficult choices were made with the United States and its citizens as a priority. Right. So I think it's high time our leadership embrace that system of thinking. So this will take us right in to the
That's right. Yeah, exactly. No, but I think I'll just say one more note about that. You were exactly, that was an important decision that Harry Truman made, and the war ended sooner because of those decisions. Granted, there were many civilians killed, and Truman knew that was going to happen, but he was looking at the bigger
picture. I will hearken back to one other point, and this actually relates to the start of the Air Force. They prior to the atomic bombs had just discovered napalm, and the use of air power had evolved from targeted, what they thought, low altitude flights with specific military targets to high altitude destroy what you can hit on the ground. And napalm had just been invented. And so the great firestorms of Tokyo, as a result, were no less deadly than those of the atomic bomb. Again, going back to the priority, you've got to have a clear objective, especially in warfare. And the objective was to end it quickly and with as much focus on the military, but within reason. And when it became apparent, the Japanese military, it was not allowing for a surrender and a different transition to a new phase of the war where they were clearly defeated. You had to consider all your options. I think Truman chose wisely, grateful, because several of my relatives ended up not having to serve in the Pacific, and they probably ended up coming back to the United States in one piece and then propagating the next generation, of which I am proud to be part of.
So. That's right. No, you're exactly right. Many of our parents' generation would not have survived an invasion of Japan and on the Japanese side as well. I mean, there are probably lots and lots of people of our generation who were born because that bomb was dropped and the war was ended quickly. So I agree with you. Now, let's get to the present, because the present, I keep saying maybe we need another Harry Truman, because, you know, the situation right now. I want to begin with the colleges, because it is absolutely insane what we're seeing in the colleges. Now, I, you know, my sons went to college, I went to college, and I always felt that as a student, you know, you had to respect authority, you have to respect the administration. And, you know, if you were going to march, you had to do it peacefully, respectfully. But that's not what we're seeing. I just learned that USC, a university that we have a family connection to, is canceling a graduation. Think of the thousands of students who have invested all their energy and all their time to graduate, to have their families there. What a terrible price for them to pay because the university, because of all this college mess, you know. So anyway, that's it. It just irritates me that we even have to be, you know, at this point, Leslie. It just bothers me that this stuff goes on in our colleges. And in some places, it is permitted. In others, it's not. Here in Texas, we had a couple of days ago, we had a demonstration, or they started a demonstration. The school told them, don't do it, or don't do it the way you want to do it. You can march, go to the park and march. But if you're going to come on the university grounds and turn it into Woodstock, that's not going to happen. So the police came, the authorities came, they cleaned it up, and we didn't have Woodstock. We didn't have Columbia. So at least I think it worked out pretty well here. But, I mean, just your thoughts, your reaction to all of this, Leslie.
Well, it's multi-pronged. First of all, ever so grateful that my son is now about to graduate from the U.S. Air Force Academy, where they are mercifully free from this particular brand of chaos. Grateful. Next thought is, of course, it's troubling. It's troubling for a number of different components. The first way it's troubling is, who's funding this? As you see, the temp encampments, they're all the sort of the same expensive brand of tents. Who are the actual players and attendees within these camps? Because I'm given to understand that many of them are actual Hamas entities and directly tied to Hamas, which is a terror organization. And so there's that component. And one of the things I get concerned about is this going to continue? Because I'm really concerned that the Democrats, not really having a platform to fight against their open borders policies and the stagflation they've caused through their poor choices, they're going to run the playbook of 2020. And this includes robust number of very violent protests that seem to be permitted by the local authorities. So those are one set of concerns. With USC, I have another set of concerns. And the kids, this is the second graduation that they've been canceled. So the first one was COVID. So now we've essentially basically let that group of kids know, hey, you guys are not important over the political policies and you know, so you can go and not have your graduation again for a second time, which that's really crappy for them. But more worrisome, and again, that goes back to the connection to terrorists, is does USC know something about a terror threat they aren't sharing? And that is the reason that they canceled the graduation. So that's another chunk. A third component of my worry is something Bill Jacobson of Legal Insurrection goes in. And I invite everybody, please, 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 if you want to understand what's going on in campuses today, please look at Legal Insurrection. Please help support organization. As Professor Jacobson and his team of lawyers who work in the back room, I'm the front room talent, they work in the back room, but they're applying court cases and fighting against diversity, equity, and inclusion and critical race theory and everything that makes campuses toxic enough so that you have groups of students and professors hostile to Jewish people able to act out. And a good example of that was featured in a post this morning where one of the Columbia students decided it was okay to go into administrator's office and say, basically, you're lucky he's not going out and murdering Zionists on the grounds. So that DEI, critical race theory, and the fact that the campuses over time have stifled conservative thought or challenges to this toxic cultural Marxism, you know, cultural revolution flavor. So there's nobody to challenge any of this toxic thinking, any of this not intolerant thinking, and clearly any of this anti-Semitic thinking. So now especially our elite campuses now, because this is, I think, a real problem with the elite campuses that have become, you know, something that Jewish kids are not safe, don't feel safe in attending. And right. I think Jewish parents are beginning to reconsider where they send their students.
Well,
and
so who they vote for. Hopefully who they vote for too, because they need to consider that as well. But I just think it is a victory for these mobs when you basically shut down a graduation. I mean, the kids are technically going to get their degree, I guess, some other way, but they're not going to have that graduation moment that we all remember. I had it with my sons, where you go, and, you know, I remember when our number two son graduated here at SMU, that President Bush, who's, you know, Mrs. Bush is on the board there at SMU, and President Bush actually spoke at his graduation. How cool that was, you know, to actually be there, you know, have the former president of the United States speak. I mean, I thought that was really cool. And that we even got to say goodbye to him as he was driving away. But that's the kind of thing that I remember from my own graduations. Those are special moments in the lives of people. And whatever school you go to, it's a special moment. And I just feel like we're taking that away from the kids because these mobs have won. They've won. They have turned these campuses into like Woodstock, where you have all these tents. They're all green, as you mentioned. You know, somebody's funding this. And all these placards are all the same. Isn't that amazing? But I just think it's horrible. It's a lack of leadership. That's all I can tell you. It's a lack of leadership at the school, at the city, at the state. I mean, I hate to repeat myself, but I think the mobs, these demonstrators, they've won when they shut down their graduation
list. It goes back to priorities. And if an administrator's priority is virtue signaling and supporting a progressive agenda as opposed to creating a safe environment where true academics and research is promoted and nurtured, and where the professors and academic staff are selected based on merit as opposed to their political ideology. So I would suggest going forward, if I were to send Blake again, you know, the state school or a local community college paired with a good trade school might be the better way to go if you want your child to survive and thrive. Because what Harvard and Columbia and USC have managed to do is tarnish the degrees, that there is no employer, there's nobody who would like a quality student that will, you know, that degree from those institutions might only guarantee that you have somebody who is anti-Semitic, social justice activist. And as we saw with Google recently, these social justice activists don't care if you are the chief operating officer, if you're against their agenda, they'll be sitting in your office and protesting,
right,
regardless of what your corporate woke policies might be.
Yeah.
So you get the behavior you reward, and we're beginning to see what behavior has been rewarded for oh so many years on campuses.
That's right. And let me say something else, too, that bothers me. If you're a student at Columbia and you don't like where they invest their money or who is funding the university, then you need to go to another school. But you don't get to somehow march and tell the university, hey, you know, don't have, gun manufacturers donate to your school. That's not your job as a student. Your job is to get a degree. And if you don't like who's funding them, there's plenty of other colleges you can go to, Leslie. So the arrogance of these marchers is the other thing that bothers me, to think that they're the only ones who care, who matter. That bothers me a lot, Leslie. These, I tell you something, if my mother was alive, she would say, somebody's got to take off a sandal and give it to some of these demonstrators and just give them a little, you know, a little whacking and you know what, because they're just a bunch of immature, I don't know what to call them, just immature. They think they're the most important people in the world. And I, for one, I am fed up with it. I don't want to hear any more of what their demands, and especially, Leslie, you're talking about Palestine, not exactly the most favorable part of the world for women. You see all these women marching. And I'm saying, what are these girls learning about that part of the world, Leslie?
Because I must admit, when I was in college, I was a science geek, and I was busy trying to keep up with my homework and my projects. And, you know, I was lucky to go out with a group of friends to a movie where they're finding the kind of time to act out like this is beyond my comprehension. But, you know, it's a long-term problem. It's not going to get resolved. And as Professor Jacobson notes, it's a lot of damage. And I don't think there's coming back from this, at least anytime soon. So I'm just saying to the parents out there of people who are going into college, get fully informed about the institutions and evaluate how much should be spent on what sort of degree, and make sure that, you know, not every degree is equal. You want to be able to support yourself in a meaningful way. And there's no shame in getting something that's a little less creative. You can do things on hobbies. I do Egyptology. I managed to publish a couple papers on Egyptology. I want to be an Egyptologist, but I got myself a degree that I actually could get a profitable job on and a career that sustained me. So there's no shame in that. You don't have to follow all your passions to an enormously expensive degree that is not going to be supported by the current market as it now exists.
Right. That's a very good point. A lot of these people are graduating. I have no idea where they're going to get a job when they graduate. I mean, putting aside their crazy behavior, just the degrees they're getting are worthless, as our old friend Aaron used to say. But here's something. I mean, I read this the other day. I thought it was kind of funny that a lot of students are now considering going to Southern universities, universities like in Texas or Florida. And the argument was, you go to, like you were saying, you were busy during the week. Well, I remember my sons were real busy during the week at Texas A&M. And then on Saturdays, they got to party and watch the football game. And Saturday night, they had parties. And that's kind of the college experience. You study hard, you prepare yourself. And then on weekends, you watch the game, have a lot of fun. But I agree with you. These students have a lot of free time. I don't know, in my college career, I never had the free time to sit, you know, in a demonstration for the whole day. Because somewhere along the way, I had to do something. I had to finish a paper. I had to read something. I had a class to go to. I was talking to a friend of mine who teaches at University of Texas. And he was telling me that, you know, most of the people there were actually pretty happy of the show of force that the governor or the authorities, you know, had that day, because they didn't want to have their day messed up by these mobs.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of students there that are suffering silently as their administrators cater to the insanity. So any institution or any governor who demonstrates some amount of protections for the students and just, you know, imposes reasonable behavior, you know, is going to get a lot of credit by most normal people in this country.
Right. No, you're exactly right. Well, let's move on to another topic. It was going to be our first topic today until this college thing came up. And that is the article that you recently wrote about energy and the cost of energy. Inflation went up again today, or at least the indications of about inflation. So inflation is going to be around for a while. I just saw the gas station this morning as I was going out for a breakfast. The gas station was $3.51. That's pretty high for us.
We're not accustomed. California, it's like $5.50.
I know. I know. I shouldn't complain.
I dream of 350 gasoline.
Yeah, I know. I know. But it was for us. That's an eye shocker, you know, to see that. But again, you wrote a great piece. I loved it about this whole, you know, the cost of energy and maybe some ideas that you had about bringing it down and climate change. So I know that it was a very good and complex piece. So give us, like a summary of it, because I thought it was great, Leslie.
Well, basically, you know, it looks at a number of different factors. One, of course, is Bidenomics and his policies under the Inflation Reduction Act have caused energy prices to skyrocket over 29%, 13 times faster than the previous. So that's an impressive record in and of itself. But beyond that, you look around and any entity following the Green New Deal or progressive climate crisis policies is suffering from the same problem. And in California, our leadership is charging wealthy customers more per energy than other customers, and the wealthy customers are beginning to call their legislators and complain about the upcoming price hike. And again, the energy prices in California are already very, very difficult. And then it's not only this country where you have the climate crisis inanity causing real problems with real people in terms of the costs. Are facing a potential fine if they use traditional methods of heating like wood stoves because of ginned up particles and ginned up science. If something about the particulate matter being inhaled, yes, we prefer particulate matter not being inhaled. And yes, there might be some problems associated with it. But when you can't heat your, effectively, you don't have money to heat your home, what are your other options? Because freezing to death is not something that's going to appeal to most people. And so what the eco-bureaucrats and the British office suggested is that people get home loans. So get into more debt so you can get insulation and then get renewable energy. But of course, in Great Britain, renewable energy, how much the wind panels are having issues, the wind power is having issues, and it's inconsistent. And there's a lot of the definite infrastructure problems with those. And then there's an issue about solar energy. You don't get too much sun in Great Britain a lot of the times. Again, the famous British, their skin, their complexion being very pale is again due to lack of sunshine. So again, making green policy choices about renewables is not practical for every single place in the world, because every single place in the world has a different set of parameters and conditions. So when you come and you get back to brass tacks here, what makes good energy? Good energy is something that's readily available and readily obtainable at a reasonable price point for most people. And it's also going to be very efficient. So if you stack up the energies, there are two that are outstanding, where one unit of energy in produces X number of units of energies out. One is fossil fuels, where you get one unit of energy in and 100 times of energy out. So it's really efficient. So is there a place in the world where energy prices are falling? And I asked myself, and the answer is yes, Ohio, because they are now using natural gas and implementing more fossil fuel use. So their prices have decreased. And that certainly is one option. The only other energy we have that's readily attainable and very efficient is nuclear energy. So anything we can do to promote the use of nuclear energy, especially the generation 4 nuclear power, lessons learned, a lot more enhancements. The technology is getting better all the time. We should definitely go forward with, because that for every one unit of energy in, you get about 1,000 times out. And it is extremely, extremely energy efficient. So if you are planning to power up all your EVs on the electric grid, you got to have electricity there. And the only two energy sources capable of sustaining that grid are fossil fuels and nuclear power. Anything else is a boutique energy source, substantially less efficient. And people are beginning to see that with EVs, for example, the green promises made are not equal to the green realities that they are living, and EV sales are plummeting.
Yeah. Let me, I love that. I love your analysis because I agree with it. Let me ask you a question about nuclear plants, because I believe in that. I think, for example, here in Texas, we should commit ourselves to maybe building 10 to 15 nuclear plants over the next, however many years. How long does it take to build a nuclear plant?
Well, one thing a government can do. There's like a balance of things. Yes, you want to have some sort of oversight in permitting, but I think our government has too many flaming hoops, especially with the newer engineering and the new processes and safety securities in place. So I think it's up to the states to take a look and up to people to vote in on the federal level more reliable leadership who will select administrators who aren't, forcing agendas on us that are not based on reality. Like Jennifer Granholm, our energy secretary, what did she do? She went ahead and decided to do this big EV caravan, and she ran out of range, had her staff go ahead, force other customers off the charger so she could drive up and charge. Not everybody has that option. And that was one of the biggest flags about the realities of EV. We need to remove Jennifer Granholm and put in somebody who has an appreciation for the value nuclear energy can bring in and can begin sweeping away some of the nonsensical regulations, really overhauling the approval process, and the same thing at state levels as well. We cannot be afraid of nuclear energy because that really limits us and puts an arm behind our back, especially if you want to consider something other than fossil fuels.
Right.
I personally like fossil fuels.
And I do too.
Think the climate crisis CO2 fair has been not based on science and ginned up, but I am, if an energy source is going to work well in an area, I want the potential fully explored. I'm not proud, all of the above, I'm good with it. But I think we need to give fossil fuels and nuclear power a chance to shine and do the work that they're capable of doing.
Right. Let me ask you a quick question about nuclear power or nuclear energy. Is there a state in the union that has a lot of nuclear plants that is taking advantage?
No, I'm aware of a couple, like in New York State, that have been approved and are being built. And I think there are few springing up around the country, so it's not zero. I just think that if we had responsible journalists and press, we would have a lot more information on the progress being made with nuclear energy, and citizens would be more welcoming of its use, and there would be more inspiration to vote in people who would help support that particular energy industry.
Right. And I think that movie or that incident, Three Mile Island, that I'm sure you remember back in New Jersey or Pennsylvania, wherever it was, that really created, I think, did a lot of damage to the potential. But I agree with you. I think nuclear power is the alternative to fossil fuel and a good one, but there has to be regulation updates in many of these states. We're kind of going real fast through the time because we spent a lot of time talking about colleges, but I want to get quickly to a couple of other quick topics. Illegal immigration, as you know, it's a huge problem, but apparently more and more of these caravans are now going west because it's almost impossible to get into Texas because of the policies that we've implemented here. How is the problem in California? And you live close to the relatively close to the border there. How is the problem out there? What impact is it having on Southern California as well as the state, Leslie?
Well, you know, it's beginning to, in as much as we have had literally ships, speedboats landing in the middle of a day on our shores with military age men dressed all in black, you know, leaving the boats and finding quickly a van to be escorted away from. So this is real organized invasion, which is troubling. We have also experienced a couple of measles warnings in some of our hospitals up north. Again, an international traveler, which is code nowadays for somebody who came across our border illegally, of course, with all the infectious diseases that have been brought in. Our crime is going up almost continuously. And there are now targeted gangs that target homes of the wealthy and steal from them. So California, again, I wish I had better news, but it's just getting, you know, you wanted sanctuary state status. You want to invite people in, but give them Medicare and all sorts of medical health benefits, and you've got to expect this. It's virtue signaled out of our society, and these are the consequences that we are living through. And I hope the rest of the country takes this to heart, because if things don't change, we don't get change. This is the way it's going to be until. This cannot be sustained. I don't know what the future holds, but whatever this is not going to last.
Well, the other thing too is, just as the last point here, and I know you know this, that the state of California has quite a budget deficit too, which means you're going to have to figure out how to close that deficit, either raising taxes or cutting back services. So I don't know how they're going to do it. I don't know how the governor is going to walk through this, because it's, I don't know how you balance a budget, a deficit like you have, and continue to offer all these free services. I mean, something has to, as you say, it's
something's got to give.
It's not sustainable. Well, I'm not going to ask you if Newsom is running in 2024. Maybe you can tell us that the next time. But I don't know. Just quickly, yes or no. Is he running, Leslie? Because I think he is. How about you?
I think it really depends on how progressive Biden's dementia is. I think the Democrats are going to bitterly cling to Biden for as long as they can because of the complexities that are going on there. Biden's behavior is astonishing, and there is nobody who can look at him in a recent press conference and think he's the one actually running the country. I think the people behind him are used to running the country the way they want it. And hence he's not going anywhere until there is something that happens that is so obvious. And I can only encourage Kamala Harris to, you know, I wouldn't mind seeing her in. I'd prefer that to a dementia-addled man.
Yes.
But if they pull Biden, and it's just before the convention, they can do whatever they want to do and restructure things. Right. So I am not 100% certain Biden will be the candidate until everything is closed down for the Democrat National Convention.
Well, Biden. Yeah, you never know 100%. I mean, right now he is going to be, so he's the only one we got right now. But I think logic tells you that he simply cannot pull it. I mean, I don't know how he debates, for example.
Well, he was shaking hands with a ghost the other day, and he read the word pause on his speech.
And then the reference to his uncle.
Cannibal thing, that's a ship that launched 1,000 memes.
Right, so. I mean, I mean, that is just absolutely incredible. Well, Leslie, I want to thank you as always for joining us. I hope we do it more often in 2024. My best to you, to your family, to your son. Congratulate him for all his success. And just let me know when you want to do it again. As I said, the microphone is open.
Blake graduates the end of May, and then we're going to Europe. So I'll be going to Italy and Switzerland in June. When I get back in June, I'll be back for a while, and then we should be in the heat.
Well, I tell you what, if it ever occurs to you to do it all the way from Europe, that would be fun. Yeah. To do a quick, if you want to do that,
we'll have to figure out time difference.
Yeah, the time difference and with technology today would be easy to do.
By at the Villa in Chianti with a glass of wine, we might make that.
All right, let's do that. I'll make concessions with the time, and I'm sure you will too. But I want to thank you so much for being a part of it today. My best to you and to your family. And until we chat again, have a wonderful spring and summer. I hope you have a lot of success.
All right, Sylvia, all the best to you and your clan.
Thank you.
And the Cancer Talk audience, thank you for having me on again.
Oh, my pleasure. Our friend Leslie Eastman, contributor to Legal Insurrection, one of the best websites. We're about ready to get a major storm here, by the way, if you hear the thundering in the background. And Leslie is a wonderful contributor at Legal Insurrection. My favorite when it comes to energy or climate change, I always read her stuff first because she's absolutely great at that. And just an absolutely wonderful person and friend of our show. Have a great weekend, everybody. If you live in North Texas, you're probably going to get wet as we're about to get wet. But thank you for your time so much. Enjoy it. And we'll chat with you later. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas. Bye-bye, everybody.